Green is on, right? Yeah, it buzzes in your hand. So if you have been around me much, it doesn't say so, but I just accidentally put it there. If you have been around me much, you would notice that I have a great taste in music. You know what comes through the radio in the truck, or in other words, my office. Has anybody ridden with me before? You have? You know I have great music. Sometimes it's 60s rock or Motown, or sometimes it's 70s pop or classical. Even occasionally I'll listen to jazz. Does anybody like jazz here besides me? Just occasionally. It's kind of jazzy. And a lot of times I'll go to easy listening. So I don't always listen to the same type of music. I switch it around. I'll get tired of one and go to another and stuff like that. So I thank God for Sirius Radio. This is not an advertisement, but it allows me to listen to what I want whenever I want. And I get all that with no interruptions for only $7.27 a month. So I do have to pay for it. That it was not an ad, but I actually pay $7.27 a month to have the radio in my truck play whatever I turn it to. You know why? I don't like the news. There's no good news, so I listen to the music. So maybe my most go-to station is 60s on 6, or it used to be called that. It's actually on 73, if that makes any sense. Maybe it's a new math thing. Used to be 60s on 6, and then they, I don't know what they did, but it's the same station, but now it's 73, and I never remember that, so I have to put it in my preset so that I know what channel it is. It's really channel 73. I had to look it up to write that down on here. So that channel does have a small amount of DJ talk, so it's not only music, but I can choose ones that are only music. But the DJ talk isn't very much. It's only a little bit. It's either about the artists or about some kind of trivia to do with the songs or trivia about the artists. And I enjoy listening to the morning DJ, Flash Phelps. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's a DJ on Channel 73 on Sirius Radio. And if you know anything about him, then you would know that Flash Phelps start with a PH. Flash Phelps, and he has his funny farm, which also start with a PH. He puts a PH on any word he can think of, and he'll use PH morph on anything like Flashachusetts or some other crazy thing like that. Who's ever heard of Flashachusetts? But you'll be listening to him, and all of a sudden the word starts with F when it normally doesn't. It's kind of fun. But I like to listen to all those, or a lot of those old 60s songs. When I hear them, I remember what I saw. While that song was playing on the radio, or sometimes I remember a particular moment, or sometimes a period of time that has happened in my life that is memorable, and the song brings back that memory. I don't know, has anybody ever had that happen? They hear a song and bing, I'm 100 years ago. Well, not quite that long, but close for me anyway. So the people do associate noises, sounds, songs with things that go on, and memories are rekindled or returned, something like that. A song might make me remember a person, like a girl. Like if I hear a particular song, oh, I used to like so-and-so when that song was on the radio. Or something like when I hear a different song, oh, I remember standing in my house, in my room, this is what it looked like. And as that song is playing, that's what I'm thinking of, what my room used to look like or what my house used to look like. You didn't think anything could think that far back, did you? Maybe I like the channel for those reasons more than the music itself, but some of those tunes are pretty catchy, you have to admit. And when I was a young kid in the 60s, being born in actually 1960, so I saw all of the 60s, except I don't remember the first few years because I was too young. I started kindergarten when I was 4, So that would have been 1960-something. I'm not that great at math. But when I was four, I started kindergarten, so I heard a lot of radio riding the bus to and from school, just on that alone, going back and forth to school. We were on the bus quite a while. We lived in the middle of nowhere, or maybe a half a mile past the middle of nowhere. And then we rode the bus to school, and we went to school, and I looked out the window the whole time. And then we got back on the bus and went back home to the a half a mile past the middle of nowhere. So it was pretty long that I was on the bus, and I got to hear the radio a lot, not counting on listening at home. I would also listen at home sometimes, especially in the summer. We would put the radio in the wind. Do you kids even know what a radio is? It's this thing that you can turn to channel 73 and get 60s music on. And it's not a phone. It's an actual box that has knobs and push buttons that you can tune to different bands and play music or listen to talk or whatever. So for those kids that don't know what a radio is. So I'm sorry that you might not have known what I was talking about until now. So we would put the radio in the window, turn it up full blast. Since our closest neighbor was a half a mile away, no one really cared. And it was a screen window. We'd just lean it on there. And while we were working outside, we listened to the radio. So we did listen to the radio at home as well, besides on the bus. But there is a song from my early years. So if I was born in 1960 and I started school when I was four, almost five, but I was four, it would have been, what year would that have been around if it was my early years? 1965? Oh, good guess, Sarah. Great guess. There was a song from my early years I used to hear, and I still remember it pretty well. It always fascinated me. I heard all kinds of songs, all kinds of music when I was little, and I really didn't usually know the words, and Jennifer can attest to that. Jennifer always knew the words when I met her, and I always knew the tune. And I'm not saying she didn't know the tune, but I never listened to the words. I was listening to the music. Maybe that's why I grew up listening to a lot of classical music. I had to go to NIU to listen to my parents play in the symphonies and sit there and be really quiet and really still for like 10 hours in a row. And I always had to cough. And I'm trying to hold it down. And then I would finally cough and I would know that everybody in the world was looking at me. And so maybe my appreciation for that type of music was made me listen to the music. And if I listened to that type of music at night, I couldn't go to sleep. I was listening to each instrument in its little spot in the background. And I would just lay awake listening to the music. And so I'd have to shut the radio off to go to sleep. Maybe I was a backwards kid. I don't know. But that's kind of how I was. So there was this song that I did know the words to, though. So it must have been a spectacular song, or at least fascinating. But it didn't really belong on the bus radio, this song. And it didn't really fit in what was going on with the other stuff in the 60s that was developing in the U.S. So a lot of things went on in the 60s, especially 65 in the U.S. A lot of stuff went on. And this song really didn't fit any of that. And I got 1 second of that song, maybe. That was 1 second. That was the beginning of the song. Does anybody know what it is? That's the artist. And I knew you were going to get it because one time Ron did a sermon and he had one note of a song and he got it. And I knew he would get it. But do you know the song?
Yeah, the bird, turn, turn, turn.
He got the whole thing. Turn, turn, turn. So that song, to me, stuck out in my head. And every time I heard it on the radio or anywhere else I was, out in the yard with the radio in the window, the lyrics didn't fit the norm for what was going on. And anything else you heard on the radio, or even the style, or even the thought of what was happening. Does it bring back any memories for anybody besides me? Maybe if you're old enough. Because I was born in 60, so. And the song came out in 65. Well, that version did. Well, that was the fourth group, the birds, was the fourth group that popularized that song in 1965. That's when they did it, 1965. But it was written in 1959 by Pete Seeger. So the birds didn't write the song. They just played it and sang it in their style. And I listened to a few of the styles that other people did. It wasn't very good. It wasn't a very good song at all. But the way they did it, it was more memorable, and it just worked for them. They had what it took for them. So, can we get that one light off? This is what the birds look like. And here you thought they were people. That's what they look like. 1965. This is probably a little bit later than that because there are some where they look much younger. These long-haired guys were singing Bible verses in 1965. Maybe nowadays this isn't such long hair, but 1965, that was pretty long hair. You would get kicked out of school if you went to school like that. They would say, you need to go back home, and when your hair is cut, you can come back. That's what they would say, 1965. Well, these guys were singing Bible verses, so that was a little bit fascinating to me. And it seemed out of place. It didn't fit what was going on in the country or what it was turning to, if you will, but what the country was turning into. You remember the name of their song, don't you? Oh, no. That's okay. I got it. I stopped it. I think it's going to play again. The picture went off, so I have in my notes where I end slides. So this is an example. Here's an example of Bible in a song. Okay, this song that they did. And I'm going to play 1 minute and 24 seconds. It might seem like 10 minutes, but not to me, because this is like great music. So listen to the lyrics, and then you'll know what I'm talking about, if they ever get to the lyrics. That was 1 minute, 24 seconds. And you can hear in the lyrics that you can recognize that if you know much about your Bible or even a medium amount about your Bible, that those are Bible words pretty much taken as it's written, word for word, right out of King James, and put into a song and sung by a bunch of long-haired hippies. Well, I don't know if they were hippies or not, but it just didn't fit in my head because I recognize those words. I learned those at church. But on the bus and out in the world, it didn't really fit. So they do the lyrics of the Bible verses, and then they add this phrase after the last of the phrase that's in the Bible. The Bible has, it's eight different verses in a row. And that's what their song is. And then at the end of those eight verses, they add one phrase. So you're going to hear a time for peace, a time for war, and then you're going to hear another phrase.
A time to lose, a time to win, a time to sow, a time for God.
they put on their, I swear it's not too late. That part's not in the Bible. But all those other words are. So they're using this message to transport information to the listeners for a cause or for a reason. A time for peace, I swear it's not too late. This is 1965. I don't usually say I swear, but that's the lyrics, so I said it, okay? The verses are Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8, if you didn't recognize or remember where they are. And it's pretty much verbatim, word for word, how it's written in the Bible with a few things added here and there, but they took the words of the Bible and made it into a song. Well, Seeger did earlier. They just performed it in a way that they thought was appropriate for the song. In 1965, this song was released by the Byrds in March, and by December of 1965, it went all the way to the top of the chart. It made them very popular, the group. They were as popular for a few weeks as the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all those other very popular groups that were in the 60s. Didn't last a long time, but that song really put them to the top. At the same time, the U.S. had a lot of other things going on besides the popularity of young people and the impressions they make on what's going on. The U.S. had a lot of other things going on in other fronts. That's the year, 1965, that the American ground troops arrived in Vietnam. The men on college campuses were burning their draft cards. The U.S. had started a draft process to supply the war with soldiers. That's what the draft was all about. They would draw names, draw numbers, and if your birth date matched with what they drew, you were conscribed to go to the service, and you had to go to the war. So these people got their information, and they burned it out in public. They made fires and stood around and protested the war. This is other things that were going on in the U.S. Black civil rights activists were getting hosed by the police with fire hoses. The police dogs were unleashed on them. President Johnson was promoting his great society reform. It included the aid to education, Medicare, urban renewal, a wide scale to fight poverty, and control and prevention of crime. Back in 1965, yeah, that part's not working. The crime is not under control. I don't know if anybody knows that or not. It's in the government, but I'm sure they do. That part is an ongoing problem. Crime is much worse, in my opinion, than it was in 1965. During all this that was going on, this turmoil in the U.S., a group of shaggy-haired young men pressed the nation to turn, turn, turn. That was the name of their song. And they were pressing the people with their popularity to turn. And that's a term used to show that change is inevitable. So let's stop the madness. All these mad, crazy things that are going on, let's stop, let's turn, let's do something different. Turn from it. That's what the turn, turn, turn is about in the song. Everything has its season. We need to go in a different direction now. That was the message of the song. It turns out it was an anti-war statement, the song that is. It was a song against the war, the Vietnam War, that was just really brewing at that time for the soldiers, and it went on for quite a while. There were officers already in place before the first soldiers went, like 2,500, I believe. And then in, I think, March of 1965, the first 1,500 soldiers went over. And then they kept adding and adding and adding until it was kind of out of hand. And then they just kind of gave up and everybody came home. It was kind of anticlimactic for a war as far as wars go. And that's why the lyrics included, I swear it's not too late for peace, is what it was talking about. So me at my young age, I did not know all of that stuff. All I knew was it was a song. It was just a song. But it is true. There is a season or a time for everything under heaven, like it says in Ecclesiastes 3:1. And when I think about the events that caused the song to be written, I can draw a little bit of a parallel to our group here that's here right now, believe it or not. Did you ever wonder, how does people come up with different subject titles for a message? Huh? Well, I can make a parallel out of that because of what I see going on here, and I can see, as I look back in history, what caused the song to be written and their reaction and all that kind of thing, and how things turned out. It's easy to look back and see how things are going to go. It's not easy to look forward and see how things are going to go. So when you're in a situation that seems desperate or tough, then it takes something special to look beyond that. So the events swirling around our group here, this church, we have a lot going on right now that our group, you can think about those things. It always hasn't been like this, but I think right now it is. So in our group we have, it seems like, an overwhelming problem with physical sickness. We just got God's nose back. They've been gone for a long time. We have Les in the hospital, out of the hospital, back in the hospital. We have Gigi that has cancer. We have everything. There's all kinds of problems. There are things unexplained that are not spoken about. There are things that we have that are actually, we're physically sick. Every family here has been affected by it. There are a lot of emotional stresses right now. Family problems. I'm sure you can think of some. So much pressure for our time. There's just not enough of it for church. Don't forget what Elijah had to speak about last week, talking about time and his message about time. It was kind of fun to hear a kid give his perspective. When I think about all these problems and stresses, I think it needs to be our season for prayer. A time for prayer and fasting. So for everything under heaven, there is a time. I think that for us, it would be good and prudent to have a time for prayer and fasting. I know that the trials we face are supposed to help us be stronger Christians, and they do. When we overcome something or go through something, our faith in God can be strengthened if we aren't lost along the way. Those things can push us away too if we don't take the strength that God has to offer. So, you know the story about David and Bathsheba, most of you guys? The part when he's walking along on the roof and he sees this beautiful woman, blah, blah, blah. The story goes on, and he wants her, she's married, and the dramatic story, the drama of the story, is usually what people talk about. But what I wanted to talk about, and the result of the story, is she ends up pregnant. Her husband is, in some cases, you would say murdered. He was killed, directed by David. So the part I want to talk about is in... Oh, I thought that was just going to be, I didn't tell you. That's all right. You can read it off the screen if you want, but it's Samuel. I was just going to write the reference because it's a lot of words. 2 Samuel 12. I want to read you the end of the story. Does anybody know the books of the Bible in order? They can help me out here. I'm in 2 Samuel 21. Where do I go next? Whoops, I'm in 1 Samuel 21. 2 Samuel 12, it says, where's my bookmarker when I need it? I think I was going verses 15 to 23. Now this is really the end of the story. I told you, if you didn't remember, the fact that basically David took somebody else's wife, and this is the result of it. I have to look in my notes because I'm not sure that they match up. It should be 15 through 23. Oh, that's what I have written there. Okay, I was starting to read in another place. I don't know why it wasn't making sense. So then, verse 15, 2 Samuel 12. Then Nathan, who was the priest at the time, went to his house, David's house, when the Lord struck the child that Uriah's widow bore to David, so that he was very sick. So David's Bathsheba had a baby because of David. I mean, it was his child. The Lord struck it, and he became very sick. David therefore inquired of the Lord for the child, and David fasted and went and laid on the ground all night. The elders of his household stood beside him in order to raise him up from the ground, but he was unwilling and would not eat food with them. And it happened on the seventh day when the child died, and the servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead. They said, "Behold, while the child was still alive, we spoke to him, and he did not listen to our voice. How can we then tell him the child is dead, since he might do harm to himself?" But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, he perceived that the child was dead. So David said to his servants, "Is the child dead?" And they said, "He is dead." So David arose from the ground, washed and anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he came into the house of the Lord and worshiped. And then he came to his own house when he had requested, they set food before him and he ate. And I think that's what I wanted was, I have to verse 23. When the servants said to him, "What is this thing that you have done? While the child was alive, you fasted and wept. But when the child died, you arose and ate food." Like he had it backwards or something, is what I thought. And he said, "While the child was still alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, 'Who knows, the Lord might be gracious to me that the child may live. But now that he has died, why should I fast? How can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he will not return to me.'" So it's kind of it is a very sad story. The outcome of the story is very sad. I thought there was going to be a blank, but there's not. My point is not about David and Bathsheba and their actions and things like that. I wanted us to look at David's reaction to his situation. One thing we know about David is how much he trusted God and also spoke about how merciful God is. We learn that from other accounts of his life that are recorded in other areas in the Bible, that God is a merciful God. That was David's mantra, I think, that God is merciful. With this story, the events around his problem he had, he knew that he was wrong in what he did, and I'm not trying to say anything about whether he's right or wrong or why or anything like that. He knew it was wrong. But he still had faith in God's mercy because God is a merciful God. David didn't say to himself, "I already know what God is going to do." As long as there was hope, he prayed and fasted, even though Nathan the priest told him before that the child was going to die. So he knew that there was a death sentence on the child, but did it stop him from praying and fasting? No. Notice in verse 16, David therefore inquired of God for the child. He prayed for the child. It doesn't say that he prayed, but it says he inquired of God for the child. So the whole time he's laying on the ground fasting, I know if he's awake, he's praying. And David fasted and he went and laid on the ground all night. And we find out that he did that for 7 days. He prayed and fasted, even though he already knew what God said he would do. He still had hope and faith that God might have mercy on him. Might have mercy on him. He wasn't guaranteed mercy. He didn't give up until the hope was gone. And God did not save the child's life at that time. And David's faith and action did not waver either. He never stopped until hope was gone. So he's a good example of how we can be. If we're in a tough spot, let's take it up a notch. David was in a tough spot. And he didn't always lay on the ground and pray and fast, but when things were pretty good rough, he did. In this situation, he did. And I know in Sunday school class, the lesson was had a lot about David in it. And some of the things he wrote, the Psalms and things like that, I asked the question, when did he have time to be king? It seemed like he was more he spent more time at church than he did as king. But maybe that's part of why he was such a good king in his own respect. But when things were tough, he took it up a notch. When things are tough, I think we need to take it up a notch. My next slide, it's Romans 12, 10 through 15. That's a little bit of New Testament mixed with the Old. Does anybody remember the books of the Bible? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans? That's how I know where to find it. When I see those books flipping by, I know when to stop my finger, kinda. 10 through 15 of Romans 12 says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoice in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, and bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. So this is teaching us to be a group, not loners. Not loners trying to get along, you know. We're a group. We're not an individual only. We're a group. That's what the church is about. There's more strength in the group working and praying and fasting together than one person on his own. Psalm 4:1 says, answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have relieved me in my distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. Can you guess who wrote that psalm? Yep, it was David. 1 Chronicles 16:11 says, seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his face continually. These events that are all around us, the sicknesses, the family problems, and it seems like we have an overwhelming amount of things going on, they need God's power to help us through together. Remember what happened at Pentecost with the new church when things were new. They were together, praying together and waiting. I'm not saying that we should just get together and wait, but we do need to pray together and be together. Colossians 4:2 says, devote yourselves to prayer. And James 5:16 says, pray for one another so that you may be healed. So we can be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. This says in the second part of that verse. And James 5:13 says, is anyone among you suffering? Then he must pray. That's exactly what I'm talking about. The things that the congregation suffers from, we can help it with prayer. So this week for us, I have a group challenge. Imagine that. This is the challenge. Tuesday. Not today, not tomorrow, but the next day, Tuesday. I would like everyone to fast, including myself. I would like everyone to fast one meal. You can pick the meal. and replace it with prayer, the time you would be eating. But when you're praying, it's only people in this group. People that are ill, people that have family problems, things like that. Replace a meal with prayer to God to show him that we're serious about the fact that we know we need to stick together. Let's call on God for his strength and relief together. So let's close with a song. Number 300.